All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
If you were given the worst news, long odds on your life, what would you do? How would you react?
Welcome back to Frankly Speaking, presented by Betway. If you're going to place a bet, bet on Betway. 19 plus, please play responsibly.
It's a heavy question, but that's what Anaheim Ducks goaltending coach Sudarshan Maharaj was presented with over the last year after being diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. Given just a 20 to 40% chance of survival by doctors, the man affectionately known across the hockey world as Sudsy shared with the Ducks in an emotional meeting before a game in Toronto in February that he went to some dark places.
You know, one of the toughest things I ever had to do was call Gibby and ask him to be my pallbearer. So I was planning my funeral with my daughters.
But those that know him, that darkness, that isn't Sudsy, someone revered for his positive energy. Sudsy's a grinder. You'll learn about his path to the NHL from arriving in Toronto at age 6 from Trinidad to conducting years worth of countless goaltending clinics and camps before finally getting an opportunity at the highest level, thanks in part to his most talented protégés. Sudsy's also the ultimate team guy. The entire time he's worked for the Ducks in Anaheim, he's lived in the greater Toronto area with his family, traveling back and forth. If he was scheduled to be in Anaheim or San Diego for 3 weeks a month, yeah, Sudsy was the guy who added a week to his trip to help a struggling Gibson or Freddie Anderson. When the pandemic hit, Sudsy was the guy who walked across the border in Buffalo to rent a car and drive to California. He did that twice or three times. Anything for the team. So he turned his grim outlook into proper perspective.
Shakespeare once said, "I cried when I had no shoes, and then I saw a man with no legs. And I realized all the blessings that I look past, and all the things that I take for granted."
And yeah, there have been some bumps in the road. 11 rounds of the most aggressive chemo possible. A major surgery to rearrange and reshape critical organs. And plenty of long days and nights thinking about what might be. But Sudsy's still standing. He's back working for the Ducks, recently completing goaltending scouting missions in Sweden and across the continent. The hockey world has picked him up along the way. And now he's ready to give back. Here's my powerful conversation with one of the most beloved members of the hockey community, Anaheim Ducks goaltending coach Sudarshan Maharaj.
Sudsy,
Sudsy, so great to chat with you. First and foremost, how are you feeling? How are you doing?
Considering the options, I'm actually feeling great. About a month and a half, almost 2 months since my last chemo session. So I'm starting to recover. Still wearing small clothing at this point. I'm down 60 pounds, but slowly putting the weight back on, getting the stamina back, getting the strength back a little bit. So feeling much better. Thank you.
Yeah, glad to hear that. And if you want a little extra weight, I can pass you some. We'll talk about how you got to that point, but I actually want to start really kind of from the very beginning. You come to Toronto at the age of 6 from Trinidad, and I'm sure like any new Canadian, you learn to love hockey and you play hockey and you have a successful, you know, youth hockey career into U Sports. Then what? How does Sudsy make it from Toronto to the NHL?
There were a lot of twists and turns and strokes of luck along the way, but I had gotten an opportunity to play in Sweden. So I played in Sweden for 6 years, came back home after I stopped playing and went back to school and started to work as the goalie coach for York University at the time with Graham Wise. I had played, Graham was assistant coach with Dave Chambers back in 85 when I was with York. And so I ended up getting a chance to be the goalie coach with York. And in the meantime, started to coach some junior teams as well. And over the summers, started to work with more and more pro goaltenders, starting with Stephen Valiquette, and then evolved into Kevin Weeks, Rick DiPietro, Ray Emery, and then on and on and on. So I was coaching all these NHL goalies, but didn't have an NHL job, and eventually got an interview thanks to Steve Valiquette and Rick DiPietro, and ended up with the Islanders. Spent 8 years with the Islanders before moving on to Anaheim.
So that's a big gap in time from 1985 to 2003. Is my math right?
Nick, correct. Yeah, it was 6 years in Sweden. And then teaching, I was a school teacher for almost 12 years, working with kids with behavioral issues and working at the perfect match, kids with behavioral issues and goalies. I ended up very many years working with special ed children, kids with behavioral issues, as I mentioned, working at a behavioral center where we work with kids from grades 1 through 8 with behavioral issues. We also took in kids from youth detention and gangs, tried to get them back into school. So it was a tough job, but definitely rewarding.
In the meantime, you're teaching, you're doing individual goalie lessons, you are running camps, I'm sure.
Yes.
And you're just grinding.
Just grinding. I coached Tier 2 for, oh gosh, it was 8 or 9 years, maybe even more. Was coaching Tier 2, had worked with all of these NHL goalies and could not for the life of me get an interview in the Ontario Hockey League, and tried and tried and tried to get an OHL job. And was unsuccessful getting an interview with an OHL team, and thought, well, you know what, in the truest form of being completely naive, I thought, well, I'll just have to jump over the OHL and head straight to the NHL. And as luck would have it, thanks to Steven Valiquette and Kevin Weeks and Rick DiPietro, ended up getting that job with the Islanders.
So talk to me about what your life is like getting to that point. I'm sure a huge sacrifice for your family, lots of time and nights at the rink, and just scratching and clawing, putting together presentations, trying to get in front of people so that you can at least just state your case.
Absolutely. My poor wife, when we met when I was a school teacher, so getting that jump to the NHL was a massive thing that she had no understanding of what it entailed. There were a lot of nights, as you mentioned, grinding away in Tier 2, trying to make contacts, trying to go to coaches' clinics, you know, trying to do some stuff with Hockey Canada, which I eventually did when I was with the Islanders. But it was a lot of nights going to the rink and paying your dues. And in retrospect, it was a great thing. You know, I have a lot of young goalie coaches ask me for advice. And one of the things that I say to all of them is you know, make your mistakes where they aren't as visible. And so I had the opportunity to learn and grow and make my mistakes. And I certainly still make enough of them now, but at the time, as I was going through that learning process, just working through the process of learning the skills of being a goaltending coach.
Did you ever think it might not happen for you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Again, I was very naive, and there was a lot of frustration believing that I had a skill set that I thought I could contribute to some teams, but feeling like I wasn't able to make that leap up was very frustrating, especially when I started to work with the NHL goalies and was getting really positive feedback from those guys where I felt I would be able to contribute and help some junior goalies So it did become very frustrating for a while. But again, I was very naive and young at the time, kept putting my head down and pushing forward. And as luck would have it, it ended up working out.
Sometimes the only way up is through. Was there ever a moment when you were working with NHL clients, pupils, whatever you want to call them, that it clicked for you? You said, hey, I can do this. This guy that plays in the NHL is telling me that what I'm doing for him, what I'm showing him, what I'm teaching him, this works.
You know, you're certainly, when you're working with goaltenders of that skill set and that pedigree, as a young goalie coach, you're a little nervous. You want to make sure that you're handling things and handling them correctly. And I would have to say that the first time was with Stephen Valiquette. You know, we spent a lot of time together one summer. I could see the growth in his development, and he acknowledged that. And then, as luck would have it, ended up getting a call up to the Islanders and spending a fair amount of time with the big club that year, and came back the next summer really excited about what he felt had really helped him. There was certainly that moment. And then there was another moment with Kevin Weeks. I was showing Kevin some things, and he was struggling through them. And we looked at different alternatives and ended up finding some alternatives that really worked well for him. And I remember standing there thinking, wow, that was something that felt great with Kevin. And I know that he was, just like Stephen Valiquette, was very excited about some of these new things that we worked through. So yeah, definitely there were a few moments. I was telling the story the other day. You have those moments, and you have your welcome to the NHL moments. And I was coaching 1 year with the Islanders, and we had three goalies at the time. We had Rick DiPietro, we had Dwayne Rolison, and we had Marty Biron, all talented goaltenders. And so one morning we went out for a goalie skate, and it was DiPietro, Rolison, and Biron. And my shooters were Doug Waite, Bill Guerin, and Miro Chatan. And I remember standing on the half wall, looking at these guys going, this is a lot of funs standing on the ice right now. And they're listening to me. How incredible is that? So it was a great welcome to the NHL moment for sure.
It's definitely a lot different than tier two in the Toronto area, just hoping for a shot to get to the OHL. You've been in the NHL for 21 years now, and I'm sure probably just hearing that number, you're like, wow, that's pretty crazy. But in terms of, I guess, maybe reminding some folks who are listening in 2024, they might say, oh, goalie coach, that's interesting. But you were doing this, a lot of this, in the early to mid 90s before personal skills coaches were a thing.
Yes, for sure.
How did you make the transition from sort of just being on the periphery to being, hey, this is an absolute necessity to be successful?
You know, that's a good question. You looked at, I know going through my playing career, I never had access to a goaltending coach, didn't have a lot of resources, didn't have access to goalie schools, not that there were many of them around. And so, you know, once I retired and I came home, I thought, well, you know, there are some things from the experiences that I've had I'd like to share. And so I went about really looking at the game, because my game, you know, I grew up idolizing Bernie Parent, which was a playing style that was slowly disappearing. Even back then, I had to really set about learning the new goalie game, the new stylistic elements that I personally didn't utilize. So I really had to become a student of the game. And I really admired some of the goalie coaches, that sort of the original guys that were in the league, the Francois Lairs, the Roly Melansons, the Benoit Lairs. I really admired a lot of the things that they were doing. And so went about studying those guys, what they taught, and then took a little of what they taught and combined it with the old school elements that I felt were still successful and could still be applied. So there was a real opportunity to reevaluate the position and take it down to its bare bones again and relearn it. It was a great decision to start at that point, where I almost convinced myself that, I'm starting over. I know, pretend you know nothing about the position and relearn it. And it was back then there weren't a lot of videos, there weren't a lot of books, there weren't a lot of resources. So it was really watching, listening, and study is what went into it, as well as I said, combining the modern elements of the game with the elements of the game that I had grown up with.
So I'm going to put you on the spot. How much of being a goalie coach is physical and technical, and how much of it is mental? Like, give me some numbers. What's the spread? What's the split?
I'm going to have to differentiate a little bit in terms of the phase, career phase of your goaltender. Let's take a John Gibson, who is 10 years into his pro career. There's much less technical work that you have to do. There's still some. There's always sharpening of a skill set. So we would go through a whole series of almost a checklist of technical things to just make sure that all those skills are operating at max performance. So technical elements, they're less technical teaching with John, where there would be some more video work, there would be some more mental prep work, there'd be some more game preparation work. Now, if you take a young guy like a Lucas Dostal, who is coming into the league and learning the position, you know, when Lucas first broke in, again, it was a full checklist of individuals, of skills, but now you have to introduce where some of the lapses are in his game, where some of the things where he's not as strong. In Lucas's case, when he first came in, it was really learning how to utilize his hands to the best of their ability. So we spent a lot of time on puck tracking and the utilization of his hands. So in Lucas's case, there was a lot of technical work that went into it at first, and along with the game prep and practice prep and all of those things. So it really depends on the phase of the goaltender. You know, when I had guys like Dwayne Roloson towards the end of his career, again, not a lot of technical work, but Freddie Anderson, who was where I was working with with the farm team in Norfolk, Virginia with the Ducks, and then eventually the NHL. Again, there was a lot of technical work, as well as off ice. You know, Freddie was learning how to the proper elements of a good diet and all of those things. And so being able to spend time helping him with those things, as well as the technical elements and the game elements, are hugely important. So it all really depends on the phase that the goaltender's in and where their needs lay.
So the reason I asked you about the separation of physical and mental is probably an easy transition to what you've been dealing with the last year plus since you were diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. There's a physical toll, of course. There's also a mental toll, which you've been open about as well. And I think a lot of people around the league saw your video with the team, but just take me to, you know, you're diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. How do you process that?
You know, it's funny. I was talking to my wife about this the other day. When I first heard the words, I didn't believe it. I thought, no, it's benign and probably something that's just blocking it. What had happened was this. Because the cancer had formed where it did, it blocked my gallbladder duct. And so when I discovered that the bilirubin was flowing into my blood and other areas, you know, and went through going to the hospital, I honestly didn't believe it. I didn't believe it for the longest of time. I thought, no, they've got this wrong. I thought I had an ulcer. I thought, no, this isn't cancer. This has got to be something else. It took a meeting with the surgeon and my family doctor and an oncologist before hard-headed me finally thought, this is real. There's no denying it anymore. Let's get to it. It went from disbelief to, okay, I believe this. Now, what do we do? And I think that really helped me because I didn't spend time worrying about anything. I went from not believing it to, okay, how do we fix this? Didn't spend any time in between in that woe is me land. And that's not because of any inner strength. It was just out of, again, I think a naive element, that hockey background of, okay, well, what do we do next? And so it was a quick trip to let's get to work and get to it. I was very, very fortunate. I had some exceedingly good doctors, Dr. J. Raman here in Toronto, Dr. Koh here in Toronto, Dr. Morris here in Toronto, all spectacular doctors. So that, you know, our healthcare system takes a beating, rightly so in some areas. But I have to tell you, I got very lucky with the three doctors that I had.
When you say, how do we attack this? I mean, this has been an aggressive path to get to where you are. Before and after surgery, 11 rounds of chemo at last count, significant surgery in which you had some, what's the best way to say it? Some of your organs maybe kind of rearranged so that they could get to where they needed to get to. I mean, we're talking serious stuff. There's a physical part of that. And I don't know that you necessarily, I love your humility, but I don't know that you give yourself enough credit in terms of there's a strength to addressing that head on, whether you want to see it or not. Just working your way through from last year to now, You've been through hell and back.
The first part of it, when we started the chemotherapy, I knew I was in trouble when my very first session, the nurse was hooking me up to the machine, and she looked at the medication or the chemo bags, and she looked at me and she said, "Wow, they're hitting you with everything they've got, huh?" And I thought, oh boy, oh, great. And sure enough, after the first session, I got a call a few days later. The chemo had wiped out my entire immune system. I had no white blood cells in my system. And they called me from the doctors and said, "You need to get to the hospital now. You have no immune system." And so Ian and I went after one bout of chemo into the hospital for almost a week till they could inject me with some different medications to get my bone marrow to produce more white blood cells. And my bones just ached. So suddenly there was that. Then after another chemo bout, I developed blood clots in my lungs. Another trip to the hospital. And then a few more chemo sessions went by and it started to affect my heart rate. I walked upstairs, one flight of stairs to go up, and my heart rate hit 167. It wouldn't come down. So my wife had to call the ambulance and off I went again. And so there were, you know, five bouts of chemo and three trips to the hospital. So there was no question there was a grinding mental element to it that was frustrating. But in the end, it was game on. And there was no sitting by and hoping this thing went away. It was in my face the entire way. And then some adjustments were made. As you mentioned, we had after five rounds of chemo, we had what's called a Whipple surgery, where they removed my gallbladder, part of my small intestine, part of my pancreas, and part of my stomach. And so there was a two-month recovery from that, followed by six more rounds of chemo. Luckily, fortunately, they had made some modifications to the medication, so there were no more trips to the hospital, but it was a beating nonetheless, I have to say. You know, doctors do a very good job of not telling you just how bad chemo is, but let me tell you, it wasn't a pleasant experience to say the least, but I'm grateful that I was able to get to the stage that I'm at now.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
So you revealed in your message to the team when you had a chance to address them in Toronto in February that at some point, you know, I'm sure there were some dark moments that you had called John Gibson, who, of course, you lovingly refer to as Gibby, and you said, "Hey, will you be a pallbearer at my funeral?"
I actually made a few of those calls. I called John Gibson and asked him. He was, to say the least, he was caught off guard. But I'll give John credit. He stood up for it. I also called Kevin Weeks, and Kevin stood up for it. And I called Ryan Miller, and Ryan Miller stood up for it. My two brothers and my best friend. And so making those arrangements, I have two daughters, two incredible daughters, Alexandra and Catherine. And I sat them down and we went through the whole procedure of of the funeral and what I wanted. One of the things that I said to them was, you know, the worst thing that can be said is, I wish I had asked him. I wish I knew what my dad wanted. And I thought, well, here's an opportunity. And I wanted my daughters to see that there wasn't any fear. It was a matter of, here's what life has thrown at us. Let's not be afraid of it. Let's not be afraid of death. Let's not live our life afraid of death. Let's plan this out right down to the playlist of for the funeral. And when I was being cremated, the people that know me well know that Jimi Hendrix, I consider Jimi Hendrix a deity, not a musician. So when they hit the button for the cremation, Voodoo Child's Flat Return was to be played. I was going to go, if I'm going to go meet God, I'm going to listen to God. Yeah, on my way out, we had the whole thing set up, and I'll give my daughters credit. At first, it stung them. They handled it well.
Sudsy, I've never met you. I didn't chat with you at any point before today. And I got to tell you, I spent my morning before our conversation today making calls around the league to find out more about you. What makes you tick? Who are you? What's your story? And just the normal homework that I would do for a podcast or show that I do. I got to tell you, first off, how loved you are around the NHL. There's not one person in hockey that would say a bad word about you. Everyone has been, you know, lifted by your presence. And this is obviously well before your illness. And what a special perspective you've been able to provide for people since, you know, you've been able to share your story. That, you know, the Shakespeare quote that you shared in your chat with the team, like I was in tears listening to it, because there is, as dark as things can be at times, there is another way.
I appreciate that, Frank. Thank you. I've managed to fool them for 20 years. Coming from my situation where I was a school teacher, I think that was a huge benefit for me in terms of dealing with different people. For years and years, I've said it. You know, I don't coach goalies, I coach people. So getting to know those goaltenders and those, as people, I think has been hugely advantageous, not just on a professional level as a goalie coach, but also on a personal level. One of the things that I pride myself on is that, I mean, we all have an ego. I can deny it as much as I want, but we all have an ego. But I try to put the player first all the time. And I believe that a good goaltending coach or a good coach in general stands behind that player when things are going very well and stands in front of them when things are going poorly. If your goalies, your players, fellow coaches that you work with, if they really believe that that's your true intent, then I think you're going to have some success. I'm a big fan of, you know, everyone that I've met is like a library book. So over my 20 years, I've managed to amass a collection of wonderful personalities that I've had an opportunity to read and shelve. And so A, I'm humbled that you say that about me, but B, I take pride in those interactions because whether it's Cam Fowler or Trevor Zegras or Miro Chatan or, you know, whomever. It's great to get to know these people as people because they're, so many of them are just wonderful personalities.
How has the hockey world helped you along the way here over the last year? You mentioned Jimi Hendrix and your love for, I guess, is it accurate to say all music, but heavy metal, I guess, is your thing?
You have been speaking to some people.
Hey, I'm telling you, I don't mess around. I do the work. But shortly after your diagnosis, Henry Samueli, the Ducks owner, you get a call from someone in Metallica?
It was, you know, it's funny. Mr. Samueli, if you meet him, you would never know based on his appearance. This is why you never judge a book by its cover. You'd never know that he, A, is such a music fan, but B, goes like myself, likes the harder music. And so in the midst of my chemo, I was feeling, you know, obviously not well. And one day my phone goes off and I look at it and I'm thinking, who's sending me a video message? You know, I'm really not feeling well. And I sort of reluctantly click on this thing. And sure enough, it's Lars Ulrich, the drummer for Metallica, who is a friend of our owner, Mr. Samueli Henry, and his daughter Jillian, who's a wonderful person as well. They contacted him and say, listen, our goalie coach isn't well. Can you send him a message? And sure enough, I have this personalized message from the drummer from Metallica. I almost fell off the chair. I was just absolutely blown away for them to do that. You know, in terms of how the hockey world has helped, starts with, as I was diagnosed with this disease, my contract was expiring. And I was worried that, how am I going to make it through this, not just physically, but financially. And sure enough, my phone rings one day, unknown number, and I pick it up and it's Mr. Samueli calling me personally to say, hey, I understand what's going on. Jillian just told me about the illness and all of that. I just want you to know, do not worry about anything. We're going to reassign you and your job is to get healthy. And once you're healthy, we'll figure it out. Not only did Mr. and Mrs. Samueli do that for me, he personally did that for me. And calling and Jillian Samueli, their daughter, who is the owner of the Gulls, our farm team, constantly called and checked in, was in tears when she got the news. In terms of the Ducks, Aaron Teets, our team president, Pat Verbeek, our general manager, constantly checking in on me. As I mentioned, a lot of my former goalies, Kevin Weeks, Valaket, numerous goalies, checking in, Gibson constantly, Freddie Anderson. I had a knock on my door one day. I opened the door and there's Freddie Anderson standing there. Hey, I was in town. Thought I'd come by and see you. I know you're sick. Came and sat and spent about 4 hours sitting with me, just catching up. Sir, what the hockey did for me was they took care of me and they definitely bolstered my spirits. People constantly checking in, other coaches from other teams, other goalie coaches from other teams, constantly texting and seeing how I'm doing. I was absolutely blown away by the show of support and affection from the number of people in hockey. It's truly a great environment.
Everyone says you've had a great energy about you forever, but what does what you've experienced over the last year tell you about the power of positivity?
It definitely has taught me that, Frank. It's also taught me the power of gratitude. You sit on a chair and you stare at the same wall for a year and you have a lot of time to think. I was so grateful for all the things that hockey has presented itself. I said to a few people when they called, when I was quite young and we were living in Trinidad, we didn't have a lot of means. And there were times where I didn't have shoes. And then here I was, fast forward however many years later, Bauer gives me things from their stores as a thank you for wearing their skates. You go from that background to the National Hockey League, from no shoes to getting paid to wear skates. It really is humbling and wonderful. On the other side of it, I also got to see some negatives in myself. I didn't feel that I had been gracious enough and generous enough in some areas in terms of donating money or donating time to different organizations and people. And that's something that I vowed that I'm going to change. And so it gave me a chance to evaluate myself. On the other side of it, at Christmas time, just before Christmas, Scotiabank decided that they weren't going to cash any NHL checks. So right before Christmas, Scotiabank wouldn't cash any of my checks. So I had no money for Christmas. And this was the bank that was supposedly the proud sponsor of hockey in Canada and yet wouldn't. So I had 2 or 3 days between chemo sessions where I was feeling well enough and I had to spend running around trying to find a bank that would give me money so I had money for Christmas. And when I saw the bank manager, she basically said to me, this is about profits and has nothing to do with customer service. And so I got to see corporate greed at its highest end, and I got to see where my faults lie. And yet I also got to see this beautiful side of so many people that reached out and were so generous in so many areas. So it was a great learning experience for myself. And I really had an opportunity to evaluate what was going on around me and what was going on internally so that I could try to be a better person if I came out through the other side.
And not only have you come out through the other side, but in your guest's true nature, you're paying it forward. Mike Stothers, of course, the Ducks assistant coach, his cancer diagnosis, he says your story helped him get checked out sooner when he thought something might be off. And you and Mike Stothers were both awarded a $25,000 grant as part of the NHL and NHLPA giving plan with the 25th anniversary of the Hockey Fights Cancer Initiative. Tell me about what you're doing with the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network, which is also known as PanCAN.
Yes. When we were given this money, which I was so thrilled with, I mean, what a wonderful thing. Mike has decided to donate his portion to Ronald McDonald House in Anaheim. So I've joined forces with the PanCAN people. And as luck would have it, they're having a big fundraising walk from the Honda Center this Saturday, the 27th of April. The Ducks have asked that I fly down to California. And I'm going to be, I've been asked to speak a few words at the event and cut the ribbon. And truly one of my greatest moments in life, I'm sure, I get to present the giant cardboard check to the people at PanCan for our donation before the walk starts. Timing of it worked out perfectly. And then for it to go for towards pancreatic research, according to the PanCan website, within 5 years of diagnosis of pancreatic cancer, the survival rate is 15%, which is horrifically bad. So anything that we can do to elevate those numbers, which results in human life, is fantastic.
So you were staring down similar odds. You were told 20 to 40% survival rate for your diagnosis. What's next? What's Sudsy going to tackle next? I know you've been on a plane to Sweden. You've been scouting. You've been back in the rink. Are you back to full bore, or will you be soon?
You know what? I'm getting there. I spoke to our general manager, Pat Verbeek, to see sort of what the coming plan is, and he hasn't quite defined it yet. There is sort of indication that we're going to move towards a director of goaltending type situation, potentially. Not official yet, but we're hoping that that be something that Pat moves towards. And so there will be a chance to oversee the goalies with the Ducks, oversee our farm team. We're in a good situation. When I joined the Ducks, we had Jonas Hiller and Victor Fast up top, but we had Frederick Anderson and John Gibson in the minors. And it was my job to get them out of the minors into the National Hockey League. I say it all the time, I wasn't squeezing any blood from any stones. Those are two talented goalies. Well, right now we're entering a phase with the Ducks where we have Lucas Dostal. Obviously, we have John Gibson, but we also have, Kalik Lang, Thomas Sivhanek, Gage Alexander. And then we have a young Russian goaltender, Vladislav Buzaets, and a young Italian goaltender playing in Sweden by the name of Damian Klarer, who just was the starting goalie for Brynäs when they moved back up to the Elite Series, the Swedish Elite Series. So we're entering this phase where we have these good, talented young goalies that we need to spend some time with. So I'm hoping to be able to spend the kind of time that I had with Freddie and Gibby that I can with our young goalies in Anaheim.
Love to hear that. Sudsy, it was such a pleasure of mine and honor of mine to spend time with you and tell your story. And your perspective is so powerful. And I think the hockey world's all better off for having heard it. Thank you so much for your time. Can't thank Sudsy enough for his time, perspective, and candor amid some really difficult questions. On behalf of everyone, I think it's also fair to say, bleep cancer. And special thank you to Steve Brown of the Anaheim Ducks PR staff for coordinating our chat around a busy slate of doctor's appointments for Sudsy. All I can say is, wow, that's real talk. It's a reminder of the power of positive thinking and perspective, and also, soberly, how hockey fits into the grand scheme. This week, we'll leave you on Frankly Speaking with an appropriately named tune. Here's Treetop Flyers with Things Will Change.
All right, hockey fans, listen up because we've got something special coming your way this playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and let me tell you, it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game day, you're going to be faced with four questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle. And here's a sneak peek into some of those questions we'll be firing your way. First up, you got to pick the winning team. That sounds simple, right? But there's more. You got to decide if the total amount of goals in the game will be over or under a certain amount, and that's where the real strategy starts to kick in. Next up, you're picking who's going to find the back of the net first, and you're going to want to be careful because that's one that could be cooked early on in the game. And finally, you got to predict which period is going to be the highest scoring. Will it be a barn burner in the first, a shootout in the second, or a nail biter in the third? That's up to you to decide. Now let's talk about prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? For the daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards to treat yourself to some fresh nation gear, and you might even win a jersey from your favorite team. And for the big dogs, those who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Play now at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.